how long would it take to tear down a century of progress for organized labor in the cradle of union organizing, Michigan? Just a few hours, as it turns out. This week, Governor Rick Snyder signed the benevolent-sounding Right to Work law that effectively castrates every future collective bargaining initiative in that state forever. Here to talk about that, as well as the moral components of conservative America's war on organized labor, is the executive director of Interfaith Worker Justice, Kim Bobo. Kim has been with us on State of Belief before. She is a longtime friend. Kim, welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Now, that phrase, right to work, is such a kindly sounding expression. Would you please start by talking about the immediate impact of the changes that are happening in Michigan and why they're so important?
Well, it is a travesty what has gone on in Michigan. So effectively, just in case the listeners aren't quite clear, what's happened is for decades, Michigan has been a place where if workers vote to have a union, then everyone in that workplace needs to be in the union, and then the union is able to both represent workers when they have problems and negotiate for good wages and good benefits. And when a union can do that, you have the possibility of really lifting workers' wages and benefits up to living wage standards. So that's what's been in place in Michigan. And while the United Auto Workers really struggled early on, you know, they built a powerful union, and they have, over the years, really work to make sure that if you work in the auto industry, you spend your life in the auto industry, that you can raise your family in dignity. And that's really what the United Auto Workers has stood for. And when people think of Michigan, they think of the auto industry and they think of United Auto Workers. Mm-hmm. Well, there were some in the labor movement that thought there should be a constitutional amendment around collective bargaining. The labor movement wasn't completely in agreement on that, and there was a constitutional amendment, then ballot vote on this, and it went down. And a lot of people who are very pro-labor just said, well, you know, I didn't think that belonged in the Constitution. But having watched that, some of the right-wing ideologues in Michigan decided to use that to ram through provisions to really undermine unions and collective bargaining. And the way that you do that is you pass a bill that says a union has to provide all the services to everybody in the bargaining unit, but people don't have to pay dues. It can be a voluntary thing, and people cannot pay dues. Well, you know, when you do that, you then create a whole pattern that completely undermines the ability of a union to function, because the union doesn't have the option of saying, well, I'll only represent the people who are members, but they have to, by law, represent everybody. So then you're putting obligations on the union without making sure that they've got a funding source to do it. And the right wing called that effort to sort of really cripple unions. They have called it right to work. Mm-hmm. So the right to work legislation is really what Obama says, the right to work for less, or I say it's the right to freeload, right? Mm-hmm. They're creating a system where people don't have to pay their fair share in dues, and yet the union is obligated to represent them, and it's just a recipe for disaster. And so what you see is in states that have this right to work for less legislation that has passed, workers on average earn $5,000 less than workers in states where unions have the ability to be strong, which means they don't have this right to have a moocher system in place. So instead of having a public I think it would be legitimate to say, let's have a public dialogue about the role of unions and whether we want to support workers having the choice to have a union in the workplace. Okay, that's something we should have a conversation on, maybe. But they didn't do that. They ran through legislation on an appropriations bill and got it to his desk within a couple days, And people didn't even know what was happening. And so in a couple-day period, you've radically changed the power relations between workers and companies in the state of Michigan, with voters having no choice in that conversation. It is outrageous what has happened.
But, Kim, I don't, and I think I'm fairly sensitive to what's going on. I just don't understand what happened. There was a day, and you and I know it well, when if you thought about the auto workers, you thought about the auto workers union. Other areas of work had the same kind of situation. What happened that so many people now no longer see the importance of organized labor?
Well, I think there's several things going on. Number one, there's been a number of industries that were highly unionized, like steel, where a lot of the companies have left the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, while there's a lot of investment overseas, many of the ones that left were in sectors that were highly unionized, right? Mm-hmm. So you've seen a shifting of some of those jobs. So that's number one. Number two, the sectors that have not historically been unionized, like restaurants and home health care, these are sectors that are growing but are very difficult to organize, right? They're not huge mm-hmm. workplaces. They're small workplaces. Thirdly, the U.S. has the worst labor law in the industrialized world. In most places, you just don't have this horrible war between mm-hmm. workers and employers when workers want to have a union. U.S. law on this is just really horrible. For example, we have a law that says you can't be fired for striking, but you can be permanently replaced. Hmm. Well, like, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. Right? I can be permanently replaced, but I'm not fired. Well, permanent replacement. Again, you can't do permanent replacement in any other industrialized world, nation in the world. And so we've just got a different set of laws that really are not favorable to workers. And then on top of all that, we have really a culture that's changed with employers that's really much more out about, you know, how do I make the most for myself and for my shareholders? Mm-hmm. This notion of that workers need to share in the prosperity, which is really a core union notion, right? If a company's doing well, that the workers should share in that prosperity. That's really the union notion on that is running against a lot of corporate culture right now that is mm-hmm. really, you know, it's me and mine, and I don't really care, you know, what happens to the workers that help make whatever product it is. Yeah. So I think that's a huge piece. And then on top of that, you have really well-orchestrated, well-funded attacks against unions and collective bargaining rights. Mm-hmm. And so these efforts in Michigan, the efforts in Wisconsin, you know, these are funded by the Koch brothers, right? Mm-hmm. This very well-funded efforts. And you have a number of newspapers that in Chicago. Chicago is a great labor city. But every time they talk about labor unions, not every time, but a lot of the times, they refer to the union leaders as union bosses. Like implying that they're all mobsters, right? Yeah, they don't do that. This is not corporate bosses, right? Mm-hmm. So it's there's really been an effort to undermine unions. And as sort of the numbers have really shrunk, fewer and fewer young people have any experience with unions. Mm. And like they hear the word right to work, and they have no clue what that means. Right to work, oh, that sounds like a good idea. I'd mm-hmm. like to have a right to work. And so this effort to misname and deceitfully sort of confuse people about this intended law to undermine and cripple unions is being called something like right to work. It's really, you know, it's confusing to people because they really don't have much background. And even in the religious community, which all of our faith traditions are very clear about workers' rights to organize, the rights to have collective bargaining, and historically, the faith traditions have opposed right-to-work legislation. Again, you have so many young clergy who just don't know anything about this stuff.
Okay, Kim, hold on, right, because I want to right there jump in, because one reason that I wanted you on this show today is that you can talk about, in a way few other people can, the moral aspects of what's clearly become a war on labor. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, again, our principles are, you know, that every person should be treated with respect and dignity. We are all instilled with the intrinsic value of God. And our faith traditions all believe that poverty is a sin, and it's a sin of injustice. It's not just an individual sin, it's really a collective corporate sin in our society. And unions are not the only tool, but frankly, one of the best tools available to us to both allow workers to have a voice, right, to be mm-hmm. that person of God who has a role in their work life, but also unions are a vehicle to get people out of poverty. And an incredible vehicle for that, which is why the faith communities around the country are opposed to right to work, anything that cripples a union, the ability of workers to get themselves out of poverty, and why we are standing with workers around the country. When janitors want to organize, the religious community goes out with them. They meet with their managers. They stand with them. They, you know, here in Chicago, folks got arrested, religious folks got arrested in the streets with the janitors because unions help them get out of poverty. And so in this time where we've got, as a nation, where we've got such disparity between rich and poor, when companies are sitting on historic record profits, mm-hmm. and meanwhile, workers' wages are declining, it is a moment when we've got to use every tool at our disposal to challenge that inequity and to help workers get out of poverty. The largest growing number of people in poverty are working families right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
It's not people, you know, people who don't have jobs, that's a problem, but it's working families who are in poverty, and unions are one of the few vehicles that can help them get out of poverty, which
Kim,
is
what,
why we've got to be standing there.
What's it going to take to turn it around?
Well, clearly in the faith communities, we have an opportunity to educate people about what are these issues. What, you know, when people say right to work, I would say that these are wolves in sheep's clothing, right? Mm. These are deceitful language around core issues that we care about. And so we've got to be talking about, you know, what is this right to work for less, and what are the values behind trying to really undermine unions in the society, and who's doing this? You know, one of the things that the lieutenant governor in Michigan the other day said, he said, you know, this right to work bill, this is a bill about opportunity and freedom of expression in the workplace. Well, that's just a bald-faced lie. That is just a lie. I mean, anyone who has talked to workers about their experience in the workplace knows that low-wage workers don't have much freedom in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Most of them are afraid of getting laid off. They're afraid to speak up. They often have wage complaints where they're not getting paid all their wages, and they won't file complaints because they're afraid of losing their job. And workers will tell you, I'd like to have a union, but I'm afraid to organize a union because I'm afraid I'll get fired. That doesn't sound like much freedom of expression in the workplace. And yet this lieutenant governor in Michigan is claiming this bill will provide freedom of expression. This bill has nothing to do with that. The bill, all it does is require unions to do work for all folks without collecting dues from them. That's all it does.
Mm.
It cripples unions financially, and it requires that they represent everybody without getting dues from everybody. That's all the bill does.
Kim Bobo is the Executive Director of Interfaith Worker Justice, organizing, advocating at the intersection of faith and labor. You can learn more at IWJ.org, IWJ.org. Kim, you're always helpful, inspirational, insightful, and I know we've got to have some more conversations about all of this, but I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today to fill us in on this breaking story in Michigan. And I look forward to us talking again very near future, and I hope you have a good year ahead of you.
Well, thank you so much, and blessings in the holiday season to everybody.